WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The cost of going to a private college is staggering. Is the product worth the price? That's one of the issues Ann Matthews explores in her new book, Bright College Years, Inside the American Campus Today. Matthews is a journalist who has spent most of her life on or around college campuses. Her father was a professor, and she now teaches at New York University's graduate journalism program. She reports that college tuition has tripled in the past 15 years.
It used to be that you could get a perfectly good education at a public school for about $200 a semester, and at a private college for roughly twice that. For most of the 20th century, it was perfectly possible to work all summer and earn enough tuition to get you through the next year, books, expenses, room and board, and tuition itself. And in the last 10 years, all that has fallen away. And now, at your average public institution, Berkeley, say, or Illinois or Michigan, any of the flagship campuses, the so-called public Ivies, tuitions are hovering at about $10,000 a year. And at private campuses, regardless of ranking, a Harvard or a Reed, a St. John's or a Middlebury, families are now obliged to go into extraordinary debt. $30,000 a year is not unknown, and some of the large Northeast campuses will break that, probably within the next 24 months.
What's behind those soaring prices?
Well, a lot of things. None of them terribly pretty. One is the fact that colleges are now often run like luxury resorts, and the student services empire grew enormously in the 70s and in the 80s, and now there are so many extras and frills expected as part of the college experience.
Like what?
Oh, for instance, students expect state-of-the-art computing. They expect state-of-the-art radio stations and television studios. They expect state-of-the-art printing facilities for student papers. They expect excellent music facilities. They expect student unions, which are full of retail operations. It's very rare these days to find a student union or a campus that does not have, say, a Reebok outlet or a McDonald's or a Burger King on campus. And the commercialization of the campus has, in a strange way, raised costs tremendously.
Some college people call the price tags the Chivas Regal effect.
Yes.
What does that mean?
That means that people will pay more for a fancy college label. And if one can go out into the world with Oberlin stamped on your forehead or Harvard or Berkeley, people consider it an adequate investment, more than adequate, worth taking out a third mortgage on your house, worth taking on college loans so extraordinary that they may not be paid off till the 18-year-old's own 18-year-old heads off for college in the year 2030.
So you're saying that often what people are paying for is the pedigree of their degree rather than the quality of the education they're getting?
Yeah, very much so. College has become extremely brand conscious.
Do you have any idea what percentage of money is actually going toward education, and where's the rest of the money going?
Part of it to the student services empire, part of it to the administrative empire. The number of administrators has grown 48% in the last two decades on college campuses. And that means that salaries for faculty get squeezed out and that financial aid gets squeezed out. So a great deal of money on the campus has migrated to the periphery rather than the core. And faculty salaries are not rising nearly as fast as they might. Time spent with students by individual faculty is actually going down. The number of contact hours goes down, and the amount of work that students are expected to do also falls.
You say in your book that about half of all students are walking away from college with huge debts now. It's a lot.
Yes, they are, and people are willing to risk everything because the price of not going to college means a life of poverty and no chance of advancement. The degree has become absolutely necessary.
You say there's a two-tiered system at the universities now. The top colleges could sell every seat many times over, and the other 95% of the colleges can't afford to be selective. Describe more what this two-tiered system is like now.
The name brand campuses are very much in charge these days. And a two-tier universe is clearly forming, 50 or so extremely rich schools and then everybody else, the other 1,500 American campuses. Campuses of permanent abundance and campuses of grinding scarcity is increasingly the norm, very little middle ground for everybody else. I mean, we're still the world's higher education superpower, and the U.S. is still the great location of second or third or seventh chance learning. You never know when somebody will take to higher education or how or why. And the campus population reflects that these days. Only 1 in 5 undergraduates in America now fits the traditional profile of being under 22, living full-time on campus, attending full-time. The American campus population is increasingly female, adult, part-time, and in debt.
Can you give us a sense of the range of policies you found at colleges on admissions policies for minority students?
Colleges are desperate to have minority students, and they're thrilled when minority students apply.
What do you mean they're desperate to have minority students?
Because the number of minorities applying to higher education is actually falling. And with the affirmative action crises, it's falling faster. So colleges want, passionately want, middle-class black kids, middle-class Hispanic kids, middle-class Asian kids. Someone with the mixed-race student or the mixed-background student is the rage now. If they can pay their way, that's perfect. That's the ideal student. You get into real trouble when you have smart kids with no family assets applying because financial aid is getting so very tight. It used to be that colleges would invest in poor, smart kids and try to get them through because in the end, they more than repay the investment. But now, it's increasingly pay your own way.
You say the colleges really prize students who have a mixed ethnic background. Is that because the colleges believe in multiculturalism, or is there something else on the agenda there?
A couple reasons. One is that colleges can get far more federal money if they admit minorities. A minority student is an excellent business proposition. You can get $3 to $5 back in federal funds without ever touching your endowment if you admit one or if you admit 200.
Is this only if you're a state school?
Yes. Yeah. Administrators like that. Another reason to admit minority students is that colleges do have quite a sincere commitment these days to diversity. They've seen it works in their endowment portfolios. And they're coming around to the idea that it works in their student bodies as well.
A lot of people are complaining that academic standards have declined on the campus. Did you find that to be true?
The debate over what an educated person should know is fascinating, but it's also a little off topic because what's really declining is the number of hours that students put into classwork. And in the early, it's quite a striking drop. In the early 1960s, the average student spent about 60 hours a week in class and doing class assignments. These days, it hovers around 29 hours, leaving a great deal of time for students to either get into trouble or work like mad to pay their tuition bills. But for both faculty and undergraduates, college is increasingly a part-time operation, and that's led to enormous changes on the campus.
Are you teaching on the university level now?
I teach in the graduate program at New York University in the Department of Journalism and Mass Communication. And I find that the students are very cautious, very worried about careers, very worried about survival. They've taken on enormous debts. It's a risk as great as any immigrant getting on a ship and coming to America in the 19th century. They've staked everything they own, all their future earnings, on a $40,000 or $50,000 investment in higher education because many of them are from families that can't help very much. And so You know, yes, they could ask their parents to take out a third mortgage on the home, but they're often not willing to. And so students are facing the world at 25 or 28 with debts they know they won't pay off till they're 50.
Does that put extra responsibility on your shoulders as their teacher?
Yes, it does. And it's interesting because they're getting increasingly harder to teach. I've been teaching for almost 15 years now, and I find that the effect of television is genuine, especially in the departments where I've taught history, American studies, English, journalism. The students are bright, they're ambitious, and they know the world almost entirely from the screen instead of the page. And so when students aren't from a print culture anymore, it changes the way the university thinks about itself and what it teaches. It's interesting. If you want a shock, you should ask any student at any college to just read a page of 19th century prose. If you want another shock, give them one fragment of dialogue from any episode of Gilligan's Island, and they will identify it perfectly, explain the context, explain the characterization, and explain how it fits into the entire flow of the series and the significance of the director. They're completely visually oriented, and it makes articulation very, very difficult for them. On the other hand, students understand and love computing in ways that the faculty often don't. Except for very, very young or very, very innovative faculty, most college professors are terrified of machinery and they're terrified of change. They often have to have media services come to their lectures to push play on the video. And so you have two cultures, student and faculty, moving apart from each other at much greater speed than any time in the last 500 years.
Well, Ann Matthews, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Ann Matthews' new book is called Bright College Years.